Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation on the web at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I can feel you like an ocean that won't seem to let me go.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to Signs of Life with our host, Bob Ginsberg. I'm Fran Ginsberg, and our show tonight is sponsored by the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential and can be found on the web at www.winbridge.org. Tonight's guest is Alistair Conwell, and if you have a question, comment, or would like to talk to our guest, the toll-free number is 888-815-9756, or you can instant message the studio at Signs of Life Radio on AIM. And good evening to you, Bob.
Hello, Fran. And as you mentioned, the guest who will be joining us in about 10 minutes wrote a book called The Audible Life Stream, and we're going to be talking about tapping into other dimensions. That'd be interesting. Have you noticed, I'm sure you have, people seem to act a little bit differently around this time of the year. I mean, I've been finding, like in business, you know, that people are a little bit more cordial, and it makes you wonder, you know, if it's attributed to, you know, the people celebrating the various holidays, you know, why you can't capture that year-round, you know?
Well, if everybody would behave like that year-round, it would be great, and maybe they just picked up a bug from somebody who was just arbitrarily nice to them. That happens, you know, when you're arbitrarily nice to somebody, then it
comes back at you.
Well, it doesn't come back at you. It gets passed on to the next person.
Yeah. Well, I know we were having a conversation, I remember, about revenge, you know, and whether revenge is acceptable spiritually. I mean, you think there's room for revenge in
Let's consider it. Today is December 9th. Yesterday was the anniversary of two very important events. And I think if you apply that concept of revenge to the two different events, it might put things into perspective.
Yesterday and the day before.
No, yesterday on December 8th, in 1941, the United States entered World War II. As Congress declared war against Japan a day after their attack on Pearl Harbor.
Right.
Okay, so that was revenge.
Right.
Okay. Also, in 1980, on the same date yesterday, John Lennon was shot to death outside his Manhattan apartment building by a apparently deranged fan, Mark David Chapman, who is currently in jail for this. Again, did the family of John Lennon take revenge on Chapman and his family? No, they handled it a little differently. You know, and the law is the law is the law, and the law came in and arrested him and yada, yada, yada. But there were no negative outwardly spoken words that Yoko Ono made or anything like that. And we do know that both John Lennon and Yoko Ono are very, very spiritual people. So what's the message here?
Well, you know, at least publicly, we don't know what was going on. You know, I mean, as you know, people in grief, I mean, there's no time for revenge. You know, I mean, maybe later on, you know, that comes. But people, evidently, you're implying, and you're probably right, you know, that the Lennon family didn't believe that revenge is useful. You know, I mean, they were thinking more progressively about maybe, you know, worlds to come. I mean, what did Lennon preach? Heaven on earth, so to speak.
Give peace a chance.
Yeah.
Imagine. I mean, it was all the stuff about being peaceful and not lashing out against other people just because you believe differently than they do.
Yeah, and well, revenge is, you know, it's a big it's a big topic for many people because, you know, afterlife justice, you know, how do you reason out the atrocities that go on, you know, in our daily lives? And one of the ways people reason it out is, okay, well, in the world to come, you know, they will be dealt with. Now, I know what a lot of people believe that in some sort of a religious
sense,
right. But others believe that you're so-called dealing with it by the self-judgment, you know, self-judgment versus some deity that's sitting.
Well, isn't that the feedback that we're getting from the near-death experiencers, that there is some sort of life review that goes on when you do crossover where you are experiencing in the third person what you've done to other people? So the harm that you've caused to other people, how minuscule or severe it was, during that life review, you experience it yourself as you brought it on to someone else. And maybe that's the justice.
And people describe being extremely uncomfortable and it's painful. You know.
And then there's the other aspect of it, which we know from quite a few channeled pieces of information, that there's some sort of hierarchy of enlightenment on the other side. So those people who habitually and deliberately did bad things, whether it's stealing money on Wall Street or being a bad politician or whatever it was, they're all going to be on a lower level of enlightenment than those people who came here living their lives with this positive, non-vengeful attitude in mind.
Right, and habits are hard to break, you know. So just because you died and you exist somewhere else doesn't mean that you forget. I mean, the evidence is that, you know, we retain, you know, some memories to some degree and personalities.
Personalities.
And if you were a son of a gun here, you're going to be a son of a gun there for a period of time.
Now your friends are all son of a guns on the other side. Now who are you going to screw? You know, that's the point. It's like you're with people who acted the same way you did.
Right, which was in that theory that you hang around with people of like mind, right? We speculate that there are somewhat like segregated groups on the other side, right? People.
It's not so much a segregation. The way I've been reading it is that it's almost like if you were to take a color chart that was just white at one end and black at the other end, and all of the different gradients of white as you got to black, there's no border between any one shade. It just blends, and that's kind of like the way it is on the other side. You go from darkness to light, and that also kind of goes along with what people who have had near-death experiences talk about, a tunnel or going towards the light, and that may be just what they're talking about.
So revenge is a human term that probably has no meaning in spiritual realms.
Right. I'm sure there's an understanding of it, but it doesn't.
Well, so who knows for sure, but I would assume that it's more about, you know, development and opportunities.
Opportunities, right.
Than it is, you know, so it's hard for people to imagine in living in this existence not having the emotion of revenge, you know, I mean, because you look back in history, there was never a time where things weren't perpetrated upon others because of revenge.
Okay, and also when you see articles in the newspaper where somebody was killed by a drunken driver or somebody who just had a really bad attitude about their responsibility to humankind, just doing something that resulted in somebody else's death. And so often when they're interviewing these people, either before a court trial, afterwards, or just in the newspaper, it doesn't happen a lot, but a lot of times you'll hear somebody say that they forgive them. they forgive them. But you don't hear it as often as you used to. I think now we do. We are getting. We're becoming a very angry people.
Yeah. And why do you think it is that people will say I forgive them? Is because
of,
is that what they were taught, or that this is something?
It's an inner knowing.
It's true. I mean, I'm amazed many times, you know, so that people look at killers and people that committed horrific acts and they just, you know, they say, I forgive them. In a sense, I think, you know, they believe that the forgiveness in turn will help themselves, you know, progress, you know.
I think in a spiritual sense, granting the forgiveness to somebody else is helping them. And isn't our spirituality all about being one and helping each other?
Mm-hmm.
So you're not supposed to be doing it for yourself as much as you're supposed to be doing it for someone else.
Yeah, well, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to be talking more about the unseen world with our guest, Alistair Conwell. So stay with us, and we will be back in a couple of minutes.
Hello, I am Lloyd Auerbach, parapsychologist and author. You can learn much more about life after death, precognition, mind-matter interactions, remote viewing, ghost hunting, and other psychic experiences and research through the acclaimed Distance Learning Parapsychological Studies program at HCH Institute. Our courses are audio-based with additional written and video material. Call HCH at 925-283-3941 or visit www.hypnotherapytraining.com. Our courses include The Search for Life After Death, Being Psychic, Psychokinesis and Precognition, Ghost Hunting, Theories and Models of Psychic Experience, and more. Taken singly or as part of the certificate program, these courses will enrich your knowledge of parapsychology and the range of psychic phenomena. You'll learn about being psychic yourself. Visit www.hypnotherapytraining.com or call 925-283-3941 for information about our individual distance learning courses and certificate program.
For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you could find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
It is with great pleasure that we announce the formation of the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential. Dr. Julie Beischel, Director of Research at Winbridge and one of the premier investigators in the field of mediumship research, reports that the team at Winbridge will continue pursuing the many unanswered questions that remain in the field of afterlife science. Please go to www.windbridge.org to learn more about this groundbreaking research institute. That's www.winbridge.org.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide a forum where individuals and families who have suffered the loss of a loved one can turn for support, information, and hope. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. The Forever Family Foundation is a joint effort of scientists, research mediums, and interested people who support the premise that life does not end with physical death. We wish to prove that the bond of the family cannot be broken even by death. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707. That's 631-425-7707. Or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
For those just tuning in, our guest tonight is Alistair Conwell. Our sponsor is the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential and can be found on the web at www.winbridge.org. Bob?
And as Fran mentioned, our guest, Alistair Conwell, who was born in India. He grew up in Australia. He has two psychology degrees. He's traveled widely. It was in Nepal, the Himalayan land of mysticism, where he first learned of the audible life stream and the ancient art of dying while living. His articles on the audible life stream and meditation have been published internationally, and that is the title of his new book, The Audible Life Stream, The Ancient Secret of Dying While Living. Well, welcome, Alistair. Nice to have you with us tonight.
Well, thanks, Bob. It's great to be here, and hello to both you and Fran. Thanks for the invitation to be on your show.
It was wonderful. I know the book is fascinating, and I guess a good place to start, you know, when people, you know, read a title and they say, something along the lines of the art or the secret of dying while living. So maybe we can get into that. What is the art of dying? Why would you consider it to be an art, and why is it important for us to learn about it?
Yeah, good question. I suppose it's because the way of tuning into the audible live stream, and perhaps I should start for the benefit of your listeners by explaining what the audible live stream is. It's essentially the conscious fabric of the universe. It's the very basis of what many would call ultimate reality. And you know, in different religions, it might be given different names or terms like God or the God Force or the Buddha Nature or Brahma or whatever. But it essentially refers to that spiritual reality. And the art of being able to tune into it is by means of very ancient meditation method. Some may argue that it's actually the most ancient meditation method. And therefore being able to practice that that silent meditation method and perfect it is essentially an artistry, like any skill that can be learned. Hence, the sort of connection between being able to perfect the skill and therefore perfect this art by tuning into the audible live stream is the way to connect with ultimate reality, I argue in my book.
And, you know, I was... When I first read about the audible live stream, I never heard it, you know, put in those terms. I've read theories from various scientists that refer to a hum of the universe. You know, when they talk about, you know, a vibratory or frequency of sound that's left over from the Big Bang, and it's still in existence today and will continue to be. So I would, by the sense that it's an audible live stream, we're also talking about something that some are able to hear and some not?
Well, theoretically, all of us can tune into it and hear it. And when I say hear it, I don't mean with the physical ears, because when the scientists talk about this background hum of the universe, sort of the remnants of the Big Bang, as you say, that's a physical manifestation that you know, scientific instruments can detect. But it's basically a reflection or translation of that underlying spiritual sound, which is the audible life stream. And because it's spiritual in nature, as I say, it's not something that one perceives with the physical ears, which are designed and attuned to physical sounds. But nevertheless, there's that connection. The fact that it is spiritual in nature, and you know, if one accepts that we are all inherently spiritual beings, then really all of us, with the right sort of skills and aptitude, can tune into it, albeit not with the physical ears, but through silent meditation.
Mm. And of course, and I know you mentioned it in the book, there's quite a bit of evidence from people that have had near-death experiences, and they come back to talk about hearing sounds. They hear music in some cases, and it appears to them as if they're actually hearing with their physical senses in some cases. But you would speculate that the people in such experiences are tapping into this audible life stream.
Exactly, and this is when I was doing the research for my book. This was for me a really fascinating aspect to it because, and you'll be aware that in my book I devote a whole chapter to discussing this whole concept of the near-death experience and how there are a lot of theories about whether really is it an experience of death or is it some sort of neurological sort of process that triggered, you know, when the physical body is dying. But certainly, and I argue and provide, I hope, convincing evidence of it, that in fact the near-death experience is an experience of death. That being the case, I was fascinated that it seemed, as you point out, that many of the people who have such an experience, as many as 50%, according to Dr. Joel Funk from Plymouth University in the US, as many as 50% of people hear the sound of music during their experience. And the fact that the near-death experience is, I argue, an experience of death, then what these people are hearing is not perceived by their physical ears because, at least temporarily, all their senses have been shut down at the time of death. So for me to encounter and encounter so many cases of people who it was clear from my reading that they had no knowledge of the audible life stream or any similar concept prior to the experience, that to me was significant as well because one then couldn't suggest that really they were socially conditioned to hear some such sounds or encounter such a phenomenon. So I found that really fascinating to uncover so many near-death cases where people had unknowingly come into contact with the audible life stream.
Yeah, so we think that the near-death experience offers a tremendous opportunity for people and researchers to learn more about, you know, what happens, you know, after we physically die. Why do you think that so many of us spend our lives thinking of ways to avoid death? You know, we fear it so, and yet we have a fascination with it at the same time. What provokes this fear? I mean, we're not born with fear as a child.
No, and that's a really good point you make about we're not born with fear because I argue in my book, and the first chapter in the book, as you know, is really all about this this fear that many of us have with death. And I argue that fear is actually linked to the ego. And when I use the term ego, it's not in the sense that Freud used the term. Freud talked about the ego and the superego. In contrast, I use the term in a more philosophical, broader context. And because I argue that the ego is really the driving force of that fear, you know, by you saying we're not born with that fear, I think is an important point because it's our ego that really is created through our experiences of life in the physical realm, and therefore we're not born with a fully fledged ego as such. It just develops through time, through the experiences we have, the attachments and the habits that we acquire through life. And therefore, the stronger that ego, the stronger our attachments and habits, the more attached we become to the physical body and our physical senses. And therefore, the idea or the notion of one day that ego no longer existing is almost a psychological conundrum because the ego can't conceive of its own demise. Hence, it seems for most of us, both consciously and perhaps largely unconsciously, we have this this fear of death. On the other hand, and this is where the paradox seems to appear, is many of us also have a strange fascination with it, because perhaps we realize that it's the one inevitable thing in life. You know, one day all of us will have to encounter death. So it's this sort of psychological conundrum. On the one hand, many of us, you know, have this intense fear of death because of our ego, but we also realize that one day it's inevitable and we have to deal with it.
Mm. So, I mean, one of the keys, I guess, it's a term that I don't usually use, but when we talk about enlightenment, I mean, it would seem to be that to become enlightened is accompanied by a loss of ego. I mean, the two don't seem like they're diametrically opposed. So would you agree that, I mean, in spiritual realms, there is no ego?
Exactly. And as I was saying, because the ego really is an illusory construct, essentially, of the physical senses, and therefore linked to the physical body, the fact is that, and all spiritual traditions, as you allude to, talk about in various ways and degrees the dealing with, the grappling with, the cutting off of the ego in many ways, because ultimately it's the ego that it really is the construct that dies with, obviously, the physical body at the time of one's death, but that a larger, more profound consciousness, independent of the ego and independent of the physical body, continues. And it's that I argue in my book is what's transitioned at the time that the physical body dies. And therefore, you know, being able to be prepared for that, I argue, is pretty essential from a spiritual perspective, because at the time of death, it's the time when we enter that spiritual realm from where we really have come from in the beginning.
So, I'm sure you believe, and as some scientists do, that everything has, even material things have a vibratory in nature. They have a certain, you know, frequency. And I know we recently had a conference, Paul Rademacher, the director of the Monroe Institute, was there and did a few exercises with our group. But, Robert Monroe originally came up with a method of synchronizing brain hemispheres with the use of tones and frequency. So was that something that people might be able to use to connect with the audible life stream? It seems like a physical way of doing it versus a pure meditation.
It's certainly possible, and I'm glad you mentioned Robert Monroe and the Monroe Institute. You might recall I talk about the experiences of Robert Monroe in my book, and I've actually got some of the Monroe Institute's CDs that allow the two hemispheres of the brain to become synchronized. So I think it's really fascinating, and I find the CDs very relaxing, and I use them, before I do my meditation often. I certainly think they can help. And it was interesting in reading about the experiences of Robert Monroe that all his out-of-body experiences that he wrote about were preceded by strange vibrations, which I would argue were really connecting with the audible life stream. So I certainly see a connection with what he experiences and the subsequent work that he did through the Monroe Institute and the audible life stream. Hence, I discuss Robert Monroe and his experiences in my book. So definitely, I think those CDs can help, and I certainly use them myself.
Mm. So those who have, you know, tapped into the audible life stream, you know, mystics, people in meditation, And people do. Some people, you know, can do it regularly. When they, you know, I hate to use the term hear, but when they what they perceive as hearing with their physical senses, when they hear sounds, the types of sound they would hear then would depend upon each one's own individual vibrational frequency.
Yes, that's exactly right. And yet we can't avoid using the term hear, because when we are perceiving sounds, we automatically believe we're perceiving them with the ears. But in fact, all we're doing is connecting with the spiritual sound. We're not actually perceiving them with the physical ears. And yes, the different frequencies that can be perceived do relate to one's own level of consciousness, because you know, many mystics have said throughout the ages that there are various levels of consciousness. In my book, I sort of outline four very broad spiritual dimensions above the physical realm. But even within those four broad spiritual dimensions, each that can be denoted at the highest level with different lights, spiritual lights and sounds, but even in those broad, within those broad dimensions, there are multiple sub-dimensions, each again characterized by different lights and sounds. So hence, you know, mystics of the past who have had spiritual experiences might refer to various different sounds, purely because they might be attaining particular sub-levels within a broad level. It's a bit like, you know, in the physical realm, there are many places we can visit that have different characteristics. Mm. In the same way, the spiritual realm, you know, there are many different, in inverted commas, places or levels of consciousness, each depicted by various tones of spiritual sound.
So when we talk about dying while living, how is dying while living, you know, connected to the audible life stream?
Well, by being able to tune in to the audible life stream, one is essentially connecting with the ground force, the sort of spiritual, all-pervasive consciousness of the universe. And at the time of death, we'll be entering that realm, because the physical body dies, the ego that's connected with the physical body experiences its demise as well. So by tuning into the audible life stream while still alive, one is essentially experiencing that process of consciousness transition that will occur at the time of death, and therefore one is able to get a glimpse and experience that process that will occur when the physical body finally dies. Hence the title of my book, Dying While Living. So one is experiencing the process of consciousness transition that will occur at death, but one is still alive. Hence it's like a preparation for that process, and that veil of mystery that usually surrounds death can be lifted. And in the same way, that fear of death can be removed, because one is able to experience what will happen at the time of death. So it's not a mystery, there's no fear. And hopefully, with that knowledge, with that experience, one can take advantage and get the full benefit of that transition and attain higher levels of consciousness.
So one would be much better prepared to make the transition, but taking it further, one might have an easier time after the transition is made, maybe in attaining some growth and adjusting to the new environment.
Exactly. It's just like anything. If one has the appropriate knowledge and the experience and the preparedness, the outcomes are much, much better. It's just like if one knows at the end of the year one is going to have an examination, like, say, for example, a college or university student. If that student doesn't study throughout the year and the exams come, they're going to be very nervous for a start because they know they're not prepared. They'll have little understanding about the subject matter. Their stress levels will be high. And in all likelihood, they'll probably fail the test. Similarly, we know that at some stage in the future, the physical body is going to perish. Therefore, by being prepared, having an understanding, perhaps experiencing that process beforehand, stress levels are down, hopefully. One has greater knowledge, much better prepared, and therefore the experience can be put into perspective for what it truly is, simply a transition of consciousness, not the final demise of consciousness. And therefore, with that knowledge and that experience, the outcomes can be much better. I don't want to make it sound like it is a test as such, and so in that sense, the analogy of the university student is probably not ideal. However, I hope the idea of being prepared and having that foreknowledge and experience beforehand is conveyed, because it's really just about preparation.
It makes sense to me. We are talking with Alistair Conwell, the author of The Audible Life Stream, and the book is available in various outlets. You can purchase it via a link on the Ferber Family Foundation website through Amazon. I know Alistair also has a Facebook page. I guess that people can look that up by the title of the book.
Yeah, that's right, Bob. Yeah, I've got a personal page, but the title of the book would be fine as well.
Okay. And what we're going to do is we're going to go to a short break. When we come back, we're going to continue this fascinating discussion and perhaps learn about some other steps that we can take individually to help us prepare. So stay with us, and we'll be right back.
I would like to introduce you to the Ferber Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide support for families who have suffered the loss of a loved one. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Ferber Family Foundation at 631-425-7707 or on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
It is with great pleasure that we announce the formation of the Wimbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential. Dr. Julie Beischel, Director of Research at Wimbridge and one of the premier investigators in the field of mediumship research, reports that the team at Wimbridge will continue pursuing the many unanswered questions that remain in the field of afterlife science. Please go to www.windbridge.org to learn more about this groundbreaking research institute. That's www.windbridge.org.
The American Association of Electronic Voice Phenomena has always been international and concerned with more than just EVP. To better serve the public, the AAEVP is now Association Transcommunication, or ATRANSC. Their new website is atransc.org, and their motto is Objective Evidence of Survival. The directors believe people should know that death is not dying, and what we learn now applies to what we will learn hereafter.
Heal your loss and grief through these spiritual hypnotherapy CDs. Titles include Talking with the Dead, The Inner Healer, Meeting Your Higher Self, and a past life regression and between life exploration. Dr. Holly Holmes Meredith is director of HCH Institute for Hypnotherapy and Psychospiritual Trainings. Go to hypnotherapytraining.com to sample and order her CDs. These CDs will empower you in your healing and transformation.
For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you could find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
If you're just tuning in, our guest here tonight is Alistair Conwell. This show is sponsored by the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research and Human Potential and can be found on the web at www.winbridge.org. If you are a business interested in advertising on our show, please contact us at radio@foreverfamilyfoundation.org or call the office at 631-425-7707. Before we get back to our guest, we have a few important foundation updates for our listeners. We have two more Holidays Past events scheduled. One is this Saturday, December 11th, at the Hilton Woodbridge in Islin, New Jersey, featuring Forever Family Foundation certified medium Janet Nohavik. Doors open at 6:30. If you don't have your seats reserved yet and you're going to be in New Jersey next Saturday night, call the office at 631-425-7707 or go to the website at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. There'll be a burst on the first page for New Jersey. Just click on it and you can reserve your seats. The same information goes for the following Saturday night, where we will be at the Melville Marriott in Melville, New York, and the spirit communication for the evening will be conducted by Forever Family Foundation certified medium Angelina Diana. Doors there also will open at 6:30, and again, 3 hours of spirit communication. Go to the website or call the office to reserve your seats. And for those people who have not yet purchased their raffle tickets for our annual Holidays Past raffle, sales have been slow. If you're planning on winning, this is the year to do it. It's only $5 a chance. You'll win one or maybe two, three, four, or even five, depending on how many entries you buy, but your name stays in until all five winners have been picked, each for a one-hour medium reading with the following mediums: Bobby Allison, Angelina Diana, Rebecca Anlo Cicero, Laura Lynn Jackson, or Kathy Towell. And with these hard times upon us, some of our supporters write to say they love the radio show, they want to see it continue, they love the work of Forever Family Foundation, but they just don't have extra dollars these days to send our way. Even though we are a 100% volunteer, not-for-profit organization, it still takes a lot of money to do the work we do, and yet we want to do so much more. So this is how everyone can help without sending us money. Go to foreverfamilyfoundation.org and apply for the Visa credit card. Visa will make a donation to us for each card that is taken out, and each time the card is used, a portion of that charge is donated back to Forever Family Foundation. But you don't have to stop there. If your shopping takes you to the Internet, consider shopping at Amazon.com, but first use the link on the Forever Family Foundation website, and again, a portion of your spending comes back to support our work. Now, if you don't see what you want on Amazon, then sign up with iGive.com and name Forever Family Foundation as the charity of your choice. Then search iGive.com for your items. For each search, we will receive a donation. And when you find your items in one of their 800 online stores, sites, or hotels, a portion of what you spend is again donated back to Forever Family Foundation. So please take a few moments when you shop to show us that you care. Bob?
And we're back with Alistair Conwell, the author of The Audible Life Stream, The Ancient Secret of Dying While Living. Alistair, when we talk about scientists very often that are on the show, they talk about this theory of everything. Everybody's in search of a unified theory that would explain the various phenomena and perhaps other realms. How does a theory of everything connect to the audible life stream?
Yeah, great question, Bob, and something that I found particularly fascinating when researching the book and researching evidence of the audible life stream, because, historically, science and spirituality have been seen as mutually exclusive domains, and never the twain shall meet. But what I found was the so-called theory of everything that scientists are now proposing is a theory called superstring theory. And essentially a theory of everything is a theory that can combine all the laws of nature. Now, Einstein revolutionized science in the middle or early last century with his theory of relativity, and that's essentially a theory of space, time, and motion, and he later incorporated gravity into his theory, and that became known as his theory of general relativity. Now, Einstein's theory of gravity works perfectly well in the world that we know, the world of planets and galaxies, etc., and scientists have proved his theories with the instruments that they use. However, since the 1960s, this notion of superstring theory, as I say, which is proposed to be the theory of everything, was proposed. In the 1960s, quantum physics, rather, came to the fore, and that's a theory of the subatomic world where energy exists in packets or quanta, hence the term quantum theory. Now, the problem that scientists have found was that the Einstein theory that works beautifully in the big world of big objects doesn't work or is incompatible and breaks down in the quantum world. Now, the theory of everything, or superstring theory, succeeds in unifying Einstein's theory in the world of big objects and quantum theory in the subatomic world. Now, what scientists are proposing with superstring theory is that ultimate reality, the very ground force of the universe, is a vibratory phenomenon comprised of superstrings, which can be conceived of like rubber bands. That can be closed loop, like your typical rubber band, or open. And what's significant is that superstrings in superstring theory is wholly consistent with the notion of the audible life stream, because they're both vibratory phenomenon. But interestingly enough, physicists have shown through their mathematical equations that these superstrings can have a musical quality, exactly the same as what mystics say about the audible life stream. So I find that really fascinating that although historically science and mysticism have been seen to be mutually exclusive, today what the cutting-edge scientific theory of superstrings, which as I say is proposed as the theory of everything that combines all the laws of nature, the world of the big and the world of the very small, is wholly consistent with the concept of the audible life stream.
Well, it certainly makes sense that if the basic element, the essence of life, down to the smallest particles, are all vibratory in nature, and they all have their own individual frequencies and vibrations, that it's not that huge of a step to believe that if we believe that the other realms of existence all have their own physical laws and their own vibratory levels, that it's a continuum. The whole universe is a continuum of different vibrations.
Exactly.
So, yeah. The when you know the, It seems that the way to you know, tap into these other realms of existence or get, you know, glimpses is to eliminate our physical senses to a great degree. I mean, our physical senses seem to get in the way of making connections. So I know, you know, during meditation, that's one method of sort of putting your physical senses aside. Is that the best way that you would recommend for people to try to connect, you know, with the audible life stream to get into a regular practice of meditation?
Yes, and certainly that's the message of mystics throughout the ages, that by going within in silent, deep and focused meditation, the senses can be shut down in exactly the same way as will happen when the physical body essentially will meet its demise at the time of death. And by sitting still and going within, we're not feeding those physical senses. Therefore, it's much easier to go within and connect with our inherent spiritual nature. Mm. So it's a very ancient message, but one that seems to sort of resonate with many people.
Yeah, you made some interesting points in the book also. We live in a culture that a lot of people don't believe anything, you know, they have to see it to believe it. You know, have to see it with their eyes. And as you point out, the sight, really just bolsters the ego. And by nature, the eye, our physical eye, bends and distorts and filters, you know, incoming light. You know, and our eye can only comprehend three dimensions. So hearing, on the other hand, seems to have more spiritual implications. So you agree with that, I guess, right? I mean, hearing is not as dominating a force to the ego as sight might be.
No, exactly, because if one considers the very nature of hearing in the physical context, it's about going within, whereas the nature of seeing, again, in the physical context, is about going out into the world. And another interesting distinguishing characteristic about the notion of perceiving sound is, imagine if you're in a dark room, devoid of any light. When a sound happens to be emitted, it doesn't matter from whichever direction it comes from, you know, one will be able to perceive it from its source. Whereas if you consider seeing, really we are limited by the extent of our periphery vision in any one direction. Whereas with hearing, we can perceive the source of that sensation from any multitude of directions. Now, in a spiritual context, what that means is our sense of being able to perceive spiritual sound is unlimited from whatever dimension / direction it could come from. Hence the importance of the audible live stream and that spiritual sound, because it's possible to perceive that sound from the highest dimensions, whereas one can be limited in terms of perceiving the light. So hence an important characteristic that I think can relate to how we perceive light and sound in the physical realm.
You know, another concept that people talk about, you know, is deathbed visions, and it's so common. You know, people that are approaching, you know, the transition report. Not only do they report seeing, having encounters with deceased loved ones, but some people that are not dying, in other words, the people that are with the people that are dying, the witnesses report hearing spiritual sounds just by being in the same room as someone that's passing. So in that case, would the witness be sharing the dying experience? Are they both tapping into the audible life stream?
Well, certainly on the case studies I present in my book, that would seem to be the case, because the case that comes to mind from the book was a gentleman, John Britton, in England, who, interestingly enough, was a deaf mute, and yet nevertheless, prior, moments before his death, he was able to articulate in his own way that he had perceived some heavenly music. But what was interesting, and that's someone who's deaf, so that sort of supports the argument that it's not through the physical ears that the spiritual sound is perceived. But as you point out, the people that were with him at the time also heard the spiritual sound as well. So in a sense, yeah, I think you're right, Bob, that those people in some way shared the death experience, which sounds so wonderful, with, in this case, Mr. John Britton, even though they weren't on the verge of death as he was. And in some ways that creates the moment of death as almost a communal experience, rather than what many may perceive, and probably does occur in many cases, is a very lonely, fearful process. So it's interesting that in some of those deathbed vision cases that witnesses as well as the person dying can also tap into the audible live stream by sheer chance.
Yeah, we recently had Raymond Moody on the show, and you know, who coined the term near-death experience, and his new concerns shared death experience was talking about this very thing, that it's more prevalent than we think. And reading your book about the audible live stream, you know, the two go together. You know, it must have something to do with tapping into that stream of consciousness, you know, together in a sharing environment. So do you envision that when we talk about other realms of existence, that each individual realm has their own particular tone of sound, you know, for lack of a better term?
Yeah, and certainly that seems to be the message of the mystics. And I think is borne out by the fact that many people, and particularly in certainly the case studies I use in my book, seem to describe different sounds depending on where their experience leads them. And again, that relates to this concept of different levels of consciousness. So depending on the vibratory frequency of that level of consciousness will determine the nature of the sound and even the lights that one would perceive during that experience. Mm-hmm. And that would be consistent with music theory as well, you know, depending on how and where one plucks a particular, say, guitar string, that will determine the sound that one's perceived. So it's certainly consistent with music theory as well.
Mm. I know we only have about 2 minutes left, but in terms of advice that you could offer to those who are seeking ways to connect spiritually, what would your advice be?
To connect with the audible live stream specifically, or just spiritual advice?
Well, in this case, with the audible live stream, yeah, because that is a lifeline. It seems a conduit to realms that many people seem to seek.
Sure. I think first and foremost is to find a good teacher. Because just like anything, like, you know, if anyone wants to learn or practice or perfect a skill, you really need a good teacher. And there are a number of teachers in the world today, both in the East and in the West, who can teach people the meditation on how to connect with the audible live stream. So that would be the first thing. And certainly there's a lot of information on the internet about various teachers. One thing I should point out in looking for a good teacher, and I do give some advice in the book about the sort of things to look for in a good teacher, is the teachings should always be free. You know, a genuine teacher won't be out to make any commercial gains through their teaching. So that would be the first thing I would suggest is find a good teacher that the person feels comfortable with to start learning the meditation.
Well, that's excellent advice. So those who want to learn more, I would recommend you pick up a copy of Alistair Conwell's book, The Audible Life Stream. Again, you can find a link to that on our website. You can learn more about Alistair on Facebook. You can either look him up by his name, which is Alistair Conwell, Conwell. And also there is a page on Facebook dedicated to the book. We thank you so much for being with us, and we look forward to speaking with you again.
Great. Thanks, Bob, and thanks, Fran. I really appreciate the opportunity, and again, thanks for the invitation. I've enjoyed it.
Thanks very much. We'll talk to you soon. And with that, we would like to tell everybody that your loved ones are only a heartbeat away.
And science is going to prove it.
Good night, everyone.